serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to this special Veterans Day weekend edition of Hometown Heroes, remembering that when it comes to our veterans, all gave some and some gave all. The next voice you're going to hear was the subject of a recent mini-documentary you can watch online at hometownheroesradio.com. Dr. Fitzalbert Marius was born in Panama, raised in Harlem during the Great Depression, and was already an accomplished tailor, artist, and musician when he left college during his sophomore year to join the Army Specialized Training Program with the aim of becoming a doctor. At the time, he was mistakenly classified as Caucasian. Once the Army figured out that he wasn't, he was moved into an all-black unit, the 725th Medical Sanitary Company in the Pacific, starting with New Caledonia.
New Caledonia is a French-influenced area, and it was very interesting because the United States of America had an armed depot there. You know, that they collected things and then so on down the line. But they needed, you know, translators. And, of course, they looked at my record, and even though the Army was segregated, you know, I spoke French, so they put me in there to be as an interpreter to the people who in that area who were working there who spoke French. Now, the other interpreter who was there was a white lieutenant from Mississippi. As a matter of fact, he happened to be teaching language, and French was one of the languages he taught in the University of Mississippi. But he grew up in Mississippi. He had, of course, a Mississippian accent. So even when he spoke French, you heard the Mississippi accent in it. Huh. Like, if you want to say, do you want something to eat in French? Say, est-ce que vous voulez quelque chose pour manger maintenant? Okay, you want something to eat right now. Well, he said, in his French southern accent, est-ce que vous voulez chose pour manger maintenant? First time I've ever heard French spoken with a southern accent. And they couldn't understand him. And they would turn to me and say, qu'est-ce qu'il dit? What did he say? But I had to be very careful. I had to whisper to them in French, I'll explain to you later. Because I didn't want to explain nothing in front of him. After, you know, he'd finished and told him all he wanted him to do, then I would go off someplace and they'd follow me. And then I would tell them in French that they could understand. But I knew better to embarrass him. Because he was a lieutenant, and I was nothing but a private. So anyway, after that is when we moved to places like Guadalcanal and all that sort of stuff, and there were all kinds of experiences. And since we had medical associated with us, they did not arm us.
And let's explain that for people listening. So you're an all-black unit. Mm-hmm. That is in the Pacific, and you're following along with the 1st Marine Division. You're attached to the 1st Marine Division. But what was your job? What were you guys supposed to come in and do?
All we're supposed to do was to take care of all of these things like disease, insects, and stuff like that. If there were some certain flies and stuff, we would, to get rid of them, we had the stuff to spray, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Dig the ditches, to drain the swamps, you know, and all that sort of stuff. That's what we did. And then of course, when things happened, to bury the dead. Now, what happened, as a matter of fact, it was in Iwo Jima. When we were going in the invasion of Iwo Jima, they had the two units. So one had to go in because there were certain insects and flies and stuff and that carried a certain amount of certain diseases and stuff that they had to go in to take care of. So they flipped a coin to decide which unit would go in. No, it was a straw, the short straw and the long straw. All right. So we'd pick the right straw. So they had to go in first with the 1st Marine Division. And there in Iwo Jima, they had caves up there, and the Japanese had the guns and all that stuff on tracks. They pulled them back into the cave. So even though they bombed all the areas and stuff like that before they sent the troops in, they had all the major troops and stuff all back there because there was an airport there that the United States wanted to control and take over. But anyway, when they first sent the 1st Marines in, they also sent the 727th because the 727th lost and they went in. Now, there's 125 people belonging to each one of those groups. Only three of them made it back. All the rest of them got killed. Now, if we had gone in first, we would have only had three left. Yeah. So the Lord was looking out after me and that group. So, and a lot of things happened like that. And at Guadalcanal, almost got wiped out at Guadalcanal because there, the Japanese at that time, you know, had their planes, and we didn't have the fast planes to keep up with them at that time. And they hadn't just put them out yet. And so they would come in and they would bomb the heck out of the areas. And we were in foxholes and they bombed us for 2 weeks and stuff like that. And all kinds of people got killed and so on. But I made it through. And as a matter of fact, the Lord blessed the heck out of me because the whole 3 years or so that I was over in that South Pacific, I did not get one disease. As many enough of these mosquitoes as I got bitten with, I never got malaria. I never got any of those other diseases and all those other people got shot all around me, and I never got one injury. The Lord was looking out for Bert Marius because I wasn't looking out for myself. I never expected to be able to return back to the United States of America. My attitude was, I am most likely going to die over in the South Pacific. So I did everything to keep me alive every day. But I never expected to get back home.
You mentioned Iwo Jima. When you guys draw straws, the other unit goes in and they're decimated. All but three of them are killed. What about you having to deal with the deaths of people you had come to know? How difficult was that?
Well, you got acclimated to that. It's still the same, you know, people you know and losing is no different then than it is now. Except for the fact is, you know, you have a war attitude that everybody is subject to soon death, including you. That's part of your everyday situation. You wake up. The more you protect yourself and the more you do right, the more potential you have of continuing another day.
And you mentioned that your duties at times included burying the dead. What was that like for you? How difficult was that? How challenging was that?
That was extremely challenging because now you are not talking about burying one or two people. You're talking about getting one of them big ditch diggers and digging out a big trench and then shoving in 100, 200, 300, 1,000 people, and then covering them over.
Is that American? Is that Japanese? Is that both?
Both, depending on the situation. Now, with the Japanese, you didn't worry about IDs and stuff like that. But with the Americans, you make sure you got the dog tags off of them so, you know, had identities. But you burying human beings with a bulldozer ain't fun. But you do develop a way of handling it so that you can survive because you have to have an attitude of survival. The Japanese had a way, you know, on some of those islands we were on, they would have big speakers. On the speakers, they'd have a beautiful Japanese woman, you know, and as a matter of fact, it was one girl who grew up here in America and she went on back to Japan and worked as one of their propaganda thing, yeah, Tokyo Rose. And they'd be playing these blues and stuff. Then they would play a song like, "You had a woman you thought you could trust, but I just found out she's cheating on us." Then they announced, "Why are you colored ones up here fighting against us Japanese while the white man is back there sleeping with your wife?" But we had to learn to ignore. We learned and enjoyed the music and would dance to the music, but we wouldn't ignore what they were saying because we knew it was propaganda because we knew darn well if they weakened us, they'd come and shoot our butt the same way that they would shoot the others. We had some problems with our country, but they were the major enemy. And we weren't over there to solve prejudice. We were over there to take care of the enemy that had attacked America. And we understood you could not solve the problem in the United States of America if the Japanese controlled America. Right. So we had to get rid of that enemy first, and that's where we focused. So we didn't have the kind of attitude, well, I'm not going to work hard to do what is right to save America and hold up the American flag because they ain't treating us right. No, we didn't have that kind of attitude, you know. It's like I tell people, say, we grew up understanding life liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Not like you young people today. Life, liberty, and happiness without pursuit. Just go out. Just simply because you woke up in the morning, you're entitled to everything I got. You're entitled to produce or have the opportunity to produce. But you're not entitled to the product. But that's how they feel today.
Dr. Marius would take part in the first ever open-heart surgery that Fresno, California had ever experienced in 1958, and he continued to practice in Fresno for more than 60 years, performing more than 11,000 cardiac operations before he finally retired at age 91. He remains very active, an author, painter, sculptor, and custom tailor. He also teaches classes at the Fresno School of Mission, which offers training for pastors and missionaries.
4 years ago, I stopped being involved in physiological heart repair, and I'm 100% in spiritual heart repair. Mm-hmm. Now, I could still be doing it right now. I've developed this attitude. If you do 100% of what you're capable of doing, then you don't have any stress or guilt to carry with you. Whatever I needed to do while I was at the hospital, I stayed as long as was necessary to take care of that situation, as much as I could do with everything that I had. I never bothered to tell this to others, you know, because when I was assisting, like some would come up to me and says, okay, Bert, now I want you on this case because we're operating on the administrator of St. Agnes Hospital. And I want the very best for him, the best anesthesiologist. You one of the most experienced, and I want one of the best assistants, and so on down the line. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, I'll be there. But what I said to myself was this: they don't know who they're talking to, because every time Bert Marius steps up to that table, whoever is on that table is getting Bert Marius's best. It doesn't matter whether it's the president of the United States, the head of the Ku Klux Klan. If I give an oath that I'm going to take care of you, you want to get 100% of what I got. You say the best, as if the other people are going to get the best. If it's a bum on the street, he's going to get the same thing the president gets.
I guess here's my question on all that. 55 years of doing these kind of heart surgeries and all those patients that you dealt with, the lives that they led after that, the gift of life you're able to give to so many. What are you most proud of when you think back on that medical career? What gives you the most pride or satisfaction?
Well, the most thing that gives me the pride and satisfaction is that I have come to the point that I understand that anything and everything that Bert Marius is able to accomplish, it is because God gave me the ability to do it. All that matters is whether I am doing it according to his will, not according to my own desire. I can't remember the very last time that I had any anxiety about anything. Just like you see me and most people, and they always ask me, says, how come you always got a smile on your face? I said, because I got joy to come from within. I'm not stressed out about nothing. I go to bed every night absolutely peaceful. I don't have any control, and that's why one of my favorite scriptures is the 47th verse of the second chapter of Acts. After 3,000 were saved, it says, and the Lord added to the church daily. Remind old Bert Marius that no matter how much I teach, no matter how many sermons I might preach, how many books and manuals I write, I don't add one soul to the church. The Lord added to the church. Without him, none of this is possible. You know, being a poet and stuff, I pray this way. Thank you, Lord, for reminding me I'm birthed from dirt and would be completely inert if it were not for you. I thank the Lord for using me to further his kingdom in spite of my human deficiencies and inefficiency. That I'm not taking any credit for any of this myself. The only credit I've taken is the fact that I'm willing to submit to his will and be his steward and his messenger.
That is Dr. Fitzalbert Marius, now 96 years young and going oh so strong this Veterans Day weekend. So today you met three men in three different states representing three different branches of our armed forces. Not only did they risk their lives for the rest of us, they went on to make those communities where they chose to live better places for the rest of us to live. What a reminder of what we can so easily take for granted. That's our program for today. I'm Paul Leffler, encouraging you to thank everyone you know who has served our country and reminding you on Veterans Day and every day that freedom is not free.